Good morning and welcome to 5 at 8. It's Thursday, March 14th, 2024, and with me here is Linda Carlisle. I am Mark Overman, and here are the day's top stories. In this episode, we'll talk about the European Union lawmakers approving a groundbreaking law regulating artificial intelligence, Ukraine launching drone attacks on Russian oil refineries, Finland urging EU to increase defense spending amid rising tensions with Russia, Chinese foreign policy experts discussing the impact of Trump and Biden on Beijing, and Arkady Volozh having sanctions lifted by the EU after denouncing Russia's war in Ukraine. Story number one. In a report from CNN, the European Union lawmakers have approved a groundbreaking law regulating artificial intelligence, setting strict rules for its use. The law bans certain unacceptable uses of AI, such as social scoring systems and biometric tools for guessing personal information. It also places guardrails on high-risk AI applications, like education and hiring. Companies producing powerful AI models will face new disclosure requirements, and all AI-generated deepfakes must be clearly labeled. The law is set to take effect in about 2 years, showing the EU's quick response to the technology's popularity. This contrasts with the United States, which has not made progress on federal AI legislation. Is it just me, or is the European Union really stepping up their game with this new AI legislation? I mean, they're setting down some serious ground rules for AI usage, from banning social scoring systems to requiring disclosure from AI developers.
Absolutely. It's quite a proactive approach. They're not just focusing on potential misuse, but they're also addressing the ethical implications of AI, like the use of biometric tools to guess personal information, or AI interpreting emotions in schools and workplaces.
Right. I can see the merit in that. It's like they're trying to set the stage for a future where AI is heavily integrated into our society, but in a way that respects and safeguards human rights and privacy. Kinda reminds me of the early days of internet regulation.
That's a strong comparison, Mark. It's important to remember, though, that while the EU is making strides in AI regulation, the United States seems to be slightly behind. Despite Senator Schumer's efforts, there hasn't been significant progress on federal legislation for AI.
Yeah. I'm with you on that, Linda. It's a bit of a slow dance over here in the States. But you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes rushing into regulation can stifle innovation and entrepreneurship. It's a tricky balance to strike.
And this balance becomes even more critical when we consider other emerging technologies, like genetic editing or blockchain. The dialogue around regulation is evolving, and it's a test for governments worldwide to navigate this effectively.
Story number two. In a report from CNN, Ukraine launched drone attacks on 3 Russian oil refineries, aiming to decrease Russia's economic potential. The attacks come days before President Putin's expected re-election. Russia's air defenses destroyed 58 drones, and some facilities were damaged, but no casualties were reported. The attacks may be an attempt to show the impact of the war to Russian citizens ahead of the election. Putin dismissed the attacks as Ukraine's response to battlefield failures. Would you look at this, Linda? Ukraine's using drone technology to target Russia's oil refineries. It's like David taking on Goliath, don't you think?
This is not the first time we've seen smaller nations or groups harnessing technology to level the battlefield against larger adversaries. It's a strategic move aimed at disrupting Russia's economic infrastructure, which in turn could weaken their war effort.
Right. Hit 'em where it hurts. The wallet. But this isn't just any old time. It's happening on the eve of Russia's presidential election. Do you reckon that's a coincidence?
Well, it's hard to say for sure, Mark. It could be a strategic move to highlight the impact of the war to the Russian public just as they're preparing to vote. There's a history of warfare tactics being used to influence political outcomes. But again, it's all speculation at this point.
So it's like Ukraine is saying, hey, this war ain't just happening over there. It's affecting you right here at home. But what about the ordinary folks, Linda? These attacks could have serious humanitarian consequences.
That's a very important point, Mark. While these strikes aim at Russia's economic infrastructure, the potential disruption to civilian lives and economies cannot be overlooked. It's a stark reminder of the fact that in war, it's often the ordinary people who suffer the most.
Story number three. In a report from Al Jazeera, Finland PM urges EU to increase defense spending and coordination as tensions rise with Russia after Sweden and Norway join NATO. Denmark plans to boost defense spending in response to Russia's condemnation of NATO expansion and invasion of Ukraine. Russia warns of deploying troops to border after Finland and Sweden join NATO. Putin says Russia is ready for nuclear war if US sends troops to Ukraine. NATO increased minimum defense spending recommendation after Crimea annexation in 2014. Denmark to raise defense budget by $5.9 billion over 5 years to exceed spending target. Funding will be used to boost military capacity, aid Ukraine, and extend conscription to 11 months, including women. Denmark already announced tripling military spending over next 10 years. Might be a cold day in hell, but it seems like Finland's Prime Minister Orpo is not only pulling up his sleeves, but also calling for the EU to do the same. He's convinced Russia's preparing for a long haul with the West. That's a pretty stark warning, Linda.
It's a sobering perspective. And it's not just a call to arms, per se. Orpo is urging for increased spending and coordination on European defense, which brings back memories of the Cold War era. The echoes of an arms race are hard to ignore.
Right on the nose, Linda. You can almost hear the pages of history flipping back to the days of the Cold War. But let's not forget, Orpo's Finland shares a border with Russia. You could say he's got a front row seat to the theater of tensions.
Absolutely. And these tensions are not happening in a vacuum. Sweden and Norway joining NATO, it certainly ruffled some feathers in Moscow. Putin himself has called their entry a meaningless step. It seems like a classic power play scenario where the balance is constantly shifting.
Yeah, and it's not just Russia's feathers that are ruffled. Trump's been hinting that NATO guarantees could be weakened if he gets back in the White House. Now that's a real shakeup for the alliance. Makes you wonder, where does the EU turn if the US starts backpedaling?
It's a valid question, Mark. The global balance of power could potentially be tipped in new and uncertain directions. And it's not just Europe that's caught in this whirlwind. We're seeing similar tensions in the South China Sea between China, the ASEAN states, and the US.
True that, Linda. Seems like the whole world's in a geopolitical tango. But what really piques my interest is this. Russia's annexation of Crimea in 2014 was a jolt for Europe. NATO amped up its minimum defense spending from less than 1.5% to 2% of GDP. Now, with Russia's continued invasion of Ukraine, will we see another hike?
It's possible, Mark. Denmark's already planning to raise its defense budget by $5.9 billion over the next 5 years. We're witnessing a renewed emphasis on defense. But as history has taught us, arms races can have diplomatically and economically detrimental effects. It'll be interesting to see how this unfolds and how it impacts EU-Russia and EU-US relations.
Story number four. Chinese foreign policy experts believe that both Trump and Biden are bad options for Beijing, with each presenting different challenges. A Trump win could lead to an all-out trade war, while a Biden re-election may come with trade-offs for China's long-term goals. The U.S. election is seen as inherently destabilizing for China, regardless of the outcome. Some Chinese nationalists support Trump, believing his policies have spurred Chinese patriotism and self-reliance. However, others caution that Trump's actions could damage U.S.-China relations beyond repair. Biden, on the other hand, is viewed as a greater threat in the long run due to his efforts to rally U.S. allies against China. Ultimately, Chinese experts are divided on which candidate would better serve Beijing's interests, according to Washington Post, the source of this news. Is it just me, Linda, or is all this talk about China having to choose between two bowls of poison, Trump and Biden, a bit overblown? I mean, yes, they've got a lot at stake, particularly with regards to trade, but let's face it, China's been dealing with this kind of geopolitical calculus for a long time.
I see where you're coming from, Mark, but I think it's a little more nuanced than that. Both Trump and Biden represent unique challenges and opportunities for China. It's not just about trade, it's about the broader geopolitical landscape. There's a lot at play here.
Right, but aren't we forgetting that China isn't exactly a stranger to playing the long game here? They've weathered stormy seas before, and I reckon they'll continue to do so, regardless of who's in the White House.
Well, Mark, that's certainly one perspective. However, the stakes are high this time. It's not just about enduring the storm, it's about navigating through it effectively. And let's not forget, the Chinese leadership's deep dislike of instability. This election is causing quite a bit of that.
Sure, Linda. But at the end of the day, whether it's Trump or Biden, China's going to keep doing what it's been doing, strategically positioning itself to take advantage of any opportunities that might come its way. And you know what? I say more power to them.
I understand your point, Mark, but I think this is a critical moment for China. The decisions they make now could shape the trajectory of their global influence for years to come. It's not just about seizing opportunities, it's about making the right strategic moves.
Story number five. In a report from the New York Times, Arkady Volozh, co-founder of Yandex, had sanctions lifted by the EU after denouncing Russia's war in Ukraine and cutting ties with the country. This rare move was welcomed by some Russian opposition members as a shift towards using incentives to pressure the Kremlin. Volozh had been sanctioned for promoting Kremlin propaganda on Yandex's news service, which was sold soon after. He resigned from Yandex and stopped traveling to Russia after being sanctioned. Have you ever seen anything like this, Linda? Sanctions being lifted in response to public condemnation of a government's actions. It's a rare move, but it shows that the West is willing to incentivize those who oppose Russia's invasion of Ukraine. It's like they're saying, hey, if you publicly denounce your government's actions, we'll cut you some slack.
Definitely, Mark. It's a fascinating strategy. And it's not entirely without precedent. There have been times when international institutions have used incentives to encourage individuals or groups to distance themselves from sanctioned governments. For instance, during the apartheid era in South Africa, sanctions were often lifted or reduced for companies that implemented non-discriminatory practices.
Right, I remember that. But this case with Arkady Volozh is particularly interesting because of his prominence in Russia's tech sector. It's like he's being used as a pawn in this geopolitical chess game. If more figures like him start to publicly oppose the war, it could encourage a shift in public opinion in Russia.
That's a valid point, Mark. And let's not forget the potential implications for the tech industry. Yandex is often referred to as Russia's Google. If more tech giants are affected by sanctions, it could significantly alter the global tech landscape. However, it's worth noting that lifting sanctions is a delicate balance. It's a carrot-and-stick approach that can be seen as rewarding those who oppose controversial actions, but it could also be seen as interfering in another country's internal affairs.
It's a double-edged sword. But, you know, these sanctions aren't just about punishment or reward. They're also a way of applying pressure on the Kremlin. If enough of Russia's elite start speaking out against the war, it could potentially influence the country's political direction. It's a long shot, but it's not entirely out of the question.
It harks back to the age-old debate about the power of individuals versus the power of states. Can key individuals within a state like Arkady Volozh truly influence their government's actions? It's a complex issue with no easy answers. But it will be interesting to see how this situation evolves and whether more individuals in similar positions will follow Volozh's lead.
That's it for this morning. Have a great day and see you all tomorrow.
5 at 8 is researched, written, and performed by artificial intelligence. For more information, visit botcaster.ai.